This is Corey Potts. I'm speaking from the Radio Panique studios in the Saint-Josse neighborhood of Brussels. Today is August 3rd, 2012, and I'm going to try and explain to you on this show a kind of policing tool which are called administrative sanctions. We're in a perfect place to talk about these sanctions. In July, just 1 month ago, the Belgian Interior Minister, Joël Miquet, submitted a proposed reform to reform the law that created administrative sanctions in 1999. On this episode, we will talk about the history of the sanctions, their current uses, and the direction where the sanctions are headed, whether they're becoming more repressive and penal, or more administrative and social. I'm actually thinking about this podcast today as a kind of challenge, and the challenge is to talk about administrative sanctions in a way that's interesting to you. They are complicated and subtle tools. You basically find them in this gray technical area between penal law and administrative law. I've been very tempted to just give up trying to explain the sanctions and instead tell you a intriguing story. It is intriguing, about broken windows policing theory, about paranoid city mayors, and about overeager police. The story would have gone a little something like this. The beginning of the 1990s, cities had all these problems. Stores weren't making enough money, there was too much crime, too much trash, too many drugs, too many homeless people, and no one wanted to be downtown anymore. The community was coming apart. So cities thought, if only we had a way to get rid of all these nuisances that make people so uncomfortable in urban areas. But the thing was, in most Western countries, like the United States and in Europe, courts had been saying that it was pretty much illegal to arrest loiterers, beggars, and drinkers just because they were causing a nuisance. So the cities thought, if the problem is the law, why should the law be so special? If the law is the problem, let's go ahead and try a different kind of law. And bam! Instead of trying to arrest people for causing a nuisance, cities decided to use administrative law in order to get down to the business of restoring some order to our streets. This brings us to the late 1990s, when cities and police are discovering how much easier it was to enforce rules using sanctions rather than letting courts and lawyers get all tangled up in order control. Since then, the number of cities using sanctions has grown, the severity of the penalties has increased, there are more and more types of behavior targeted by the sanctions, and the people receiving sanctions have fewer and fewer legal protections. So that is not the story that I'm going to tell you today. Because for one thing, I think that it's gotten old. It's been repeated so many times that it's become commonplace. And another thing is that the story is just too simple. These sanctions have been around in Belgium, at least, and a lot of other countries since the 1970s. It's just not true that cities somehow just discovered the sanctions at the end of the 1990s. And also, I think the story leaves out one very important factor that made police start using the sanctions when they did in the 1990s. Security concerns were a motivator, that's true. But at the same time, prosecutors' offices in the 1990s were starting to find out that they were unable to keep up with their caseloads, and they needed to find a way to relieve themselves of some of their responsibilities. There's also one more thing, and I'll just come out and say it. I have a pretty nearly reflexive aversion to these sanctions. When I worked in Seattle at the public defender's office a few years ago, I helped an attorney try and sue the city for using the sanctions to clear homeless people out of city parks. Now, I instinctively fall back on the critiques that I learned in Seattle. So, to me, this is actually one of the things that's most interesting about these sanctions. aside from all their technical legal complexity, that I will also say is actually really fascinating, what's interesting is how in the interviews I had for this podcast, the sanctions kept being like two things at once. In some cases, they were penal, and in other cases, they were purely administrative. At times, they were being repressive, but they were also used for preventative purposes. Also, I heard that they were tools for control, and I heard that there were means to bring aid to people. I won't go so far today to say that an equilibrium exists between all these different fields. Even if it can be argued that the sanctions have not had a repressive past, both the people I interviewed for this episode, Caroline and Elk, whose opinions were actually pretty different about these sanctions, eventually both of them told me that the new proposed law for 2012, the one that Joel Miquet proposed, is going to take the level of repressions to a disturbing intensity with these sanctions. Politicians are proposing, basically, to increase fines that the sanctions can impose up to 1,500 euros and to make it possible to fine juveniles that are as young as 14. So in today's episode, I'm going to do my best to keep my own prejudice aside, and I'll invite anyone who'd like to tell me a different kind of story about these sanctions to email me. But in the end, I think that it's fair to say that we have well-founded reasons to at least worry about the power that this 2012 law could give to the administrative sanction program in Belgium. Start by looking at some statistics. So these statistics are coming from research that was done by Caroline de Heest, a criminologist and a policy offer at the Liga voor Mensenrechten, the Human Rights League. I spoke with Caroline and also an intern at the Liga office, Johan Lieven. Their office, where we met, is in Ghent. I spoke with Caroline and Lieven and Johan on August 1st, and I asked Caroline during the interview if she knew how many people were receiving administrative sanctions in Belgium. So what you're going to hear is Caroline first. She's going to describe some examples of the sanctions, and then she's going to give you some examples of the sanctions being applied in a town called Middelkerk, a beach town on the north coast of Belgium.
It's just, where have you seen these laws applied? Can you start with some examples of people receiving a sanction, or a group that's been targeted, an area of the city that's been targeted?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can see it in Bruges, for example. Bruges is one city in Flanders, where just a few months ago they decided to use the gas sanctions against excessive alcohol use. So a lot of people received the sanctions for drinking alcohol on the street. So that is a big group of people that were victimized because of the sanctions. But there are also many examples in newspapers every day, actually, of people who are in the youth movement that receive a sanction because there was too much noise when they were playing an activity or playing a game. One of my colleagues received a sanction because her dog was out at night. He ran away, and she received a sanction because the dog was not on a leash, but that's what happens when the dog runs away. So that's kind of ridiculous. Then there Middelkerke, which is actually a very peaceful town at the coast area. So that's a good one to start with. And in from 2002 until 2012, so in 10 years' time, there were 1,851 administrative sanctions.
So while we were talking about these statistics, Johan eventually came in at the end of the conversation to offer his interpretation. So now you're going to hear Johan, and then Carolyn's going to come back in at the end.
The numbers that, again, you have to, in the Belgian situation, this is increasing. Like for Leuven, I read today that it has been increasing with 300% in the last period. So if you compare it with Seattle, then all the cities in Flanders are smaller, and it's still settling down, the system. So it's the numbers are growing every year, as far as I've seen the ciphers.
Yes. To me, it's strange when they try to give you the numbers and say, hey, look how effective administrative sanctions are, because you see that every year more sanctions are being written. So to me, that only shows that cities become more repressive. So, and that it's not really this idea that administrative sanctions are effective, because if they are really effective, then maybe we should not have any numbers anymore after 10 years. But it shows to me that we just enforce more and more. So because here I have the numbers from Antwerp. In 2006, there were around 4,000 administrative sanctions. In 2011, we have 14,700. So I don't know how a city tries to sell this as evidence that administrative sanctions are very good in solving crime, because to me it shows that there is more crime every year because they need.
So in Antwerp in 2006 there were 4,000 sanctions applied, and then in 2012 there were 14,000 sanctions applied. One thing that's very important to remember, though, is that in Antwerp, in 2012, there were not only 14,000 sanctions that were applied in total. Caroline's research only includes the sanctions that the municipal authorities applied in Antwerp. These are known as communal administrative sanctions. In French, that's sanction administrative communale. In Dutch, that's gemeentelijk administratieve Sancti. Sorry for the pronunciation. You'll hear Caroline refer to them as GAS, the acronym for their Dutch name. So at this point, it's important to remember that plenty of other kinds of sanctions exist besides the 14,000 that were applied this year in Antwerp. Each region in Belgium, for example, may impose sanctions for violation of housing codes or for environmental infractions. It turns out that the communal sanctions, the sanctions that are most like penal charges and focus on public behavior, these kinds of sanctions are only a small part of the overall scheme where we find administrative sanctions. Elke de Vroo explained this to me. Elke is a professor of criminology at the University of Leiden in Holland, and she recently defended her doctoral thesis, which she wrote on the Belgium administrative sanction system. Originally, I had wanted to speak with Elke because after I read her thesis summary, she seemed to have a very critical perspective on the sanctions. At one point during our conversation, which I recorded over the phone in July, I asked Elke if she thought that the administrative law was becoming more and more penal, or if penal law was becoming transformed into administrative law. You're going to hear Elke in French. I'm going to translate over her. When I look at what happened before the evolution of the communal sanctions, it's a completely different domain in criminality. It doesn't touch at all these other areas of life. There's all these other areas of life. Since the 1970s, for example. If you look, for example, in Flanders, fiscal fraud, all the areas of our lives are regulated in an entirely administrative way. There's not even a penal part that plays a role in it.
pollution taxes. Je parle pas de petits.
I'm talking about important areas like social fraud, taxes, pollution. I'm not talking about little things. They're big.
Les gens par le biais administratif existaient déjà.
The means, then, to punish people administratively has existed for a long time and across a much wider range of affairs than our little area of communal sanctions. Elke was making a good point, which was basically, it's not really appropriate to make it seem as if the penal world is invading the world of administrative regulations. A lot of this perspective, at least, had to do with the fact that Elk, and she was not at all alone in this view, sees Belgium's social sector as uniquely robust among other European countries. And she sees the social sector as particularly resistant against the penal system. For Elk, the ability of administrative sanctions to remain administrative is a hallmark of a country that does not avoid its social responsibilities. The question of Belgium's social sector came up when I was asking Elk about the treatment of the homeless under the administrative sanctions. I was asking if the homeless were being treated in a manner that was more repressive or was more preventative. Elk explained that any group working with the homeless is only offering to help, and that nonprofits would never give information over to the police. Then Elke started to make this comparison between Belgium and the United States. I'm going to translate again.
C'est un peu tirer votre plan, hein? comme en Amérique, dans le néolibéralisme, tirer votre plan si vous n'avez pas le moyen.
So it's not just go out and find your own help like in America with neoliberalism. Just figure it out on your own if you don't have any means. Too bad, there's no social aid. Belgium is one of the only countries, and you see, I work in Holland now, and that's already something else. I need to pay 300 euros each month for my own health care if I'm sick. In Belgium, it's regulated. If I'm sick, I get some money. In Holland, it's already all privatized. It's worse for me, the guys that don't know how to pay. The people in these countries who can't pay because they have nothing. Of course, in order to provide so much social aid, these social agencies must have some means to regulate the people who use their services, which means that it's normal for a country like Belgium to rely on administrative sanctions to keep things running. It also means that just a few sanctions that are coming from the penal side of things should not be any big reason to worry. Caroline wasn't entirely okay with Elke's take on this administrative penal division. For Elke, it was a question of whether or not Belgium was a social state or a liberal state. For Caroline, though, it made no sense in the first place to call these communal sanctions administrative. For Caroline, all that meant was that administrators were playing around with words. Here she is again.
When people are trying to say that this is not a sanction and that there's no penal element to it. If it's just to discipline people, then I think it's definitely a problem because I don't think that's something that local governments should do. In some instances, people told us that the governments, local governments, are kind of taking the place of the priest in earlier days, which is a very strange link that they're trying to make there. So I don't think it's the job of the mayor and his local government to try to impose moral moral rules onto people and how they should behave. And if parents don't tell them how they should behave, then we should tell them. I think that's a very dangerous route to go. So when people try to tell me that there's no penal element to it, then I guess I just don't follow in that idea, because it is a sanction. People get fined or they get restricted from walking on the street. It is definitely a sanction. It's definitely repressive. That is why the Liga also says that it's judges who should impose the sanctions, because it is repressive.
So again, for Elk, these sanctions, these communal sanctions, are purely administrative. They're part of a large administrative legal system that the Belgian social state uses to run. For Caroline, these sanctions are coming directly out of the legal system. They're purely repressive. And this difference between how they're seeing these sanctions, it came up again when I asked each of them about begging. Cities in Belgium have recently begun to use these administrative sanctions to regulate how people can beg in the cities. Elke had actually gotten started talking about Belgium's strong social service sector after I had asked her about whether or not beggars were being repressed. Elke also told me that, according to her studies, police were more likely to intervene with a beggar or a homeless person by taking him to a shelter instead of giving him a sanction. Caroline was much less enthusiastic. She described for me a citywide ban on begging that had lasted for 10 days during a recent festival in Ghent. And she pointed out that the penal codes in Belgium do not even mention begging. She wondered why it was necessary to make begging a sanctionable offense then. It was just sending the wrong kind of message, she thought. What was becoming clear to me after I finished both these interviews, and I hope that you're hearing this as well, it's that depending on your approach when we talk about these administrative sanctions, you're going to be seeing something and talking about something that doesn't necessarily correspond at all with what someone on the other side of the debate is seeing and talking about. I mean, what's not clear is whether or not Elke and Caroline were even talking about the same sanctions. For example, in each interview, we talked about the evolution of the sanctions through the 1990s. Elk talked mostly about a man named Louis Toback. He was a socialist and a minister of the interior, which is the post that controls the police, among other services in Belgium. And he was the minister of the interior between 1988 and 1994. When Toback was in power, most of the government was controlled by socialists, and most of the local mayors were socialist. And it had been that way for a long time. For 10 years almost, Elke said. And during that whole time, the socialists had tried to put prevention measures into place. They had tried to help without punishing. And then, at the beginning of the 1990s, in 1991, the far-right party in Flanders, the Vlaams Bloc, came to power and changed the direction of the debate. Here's Elke again, and again I'm going to translate.
The Black Sunday, le dimanche noir avec when? Le Vlaams Bloc. Je me rappelle ça encore très très bien que les élections étaient très très mal tournées, c'est-à-dire
I remember that very well. The elections took a turn for the worst. 25% of the population voted for the Vlaams Bloc. It was a total crisis with the socialists.
Comment ça arrive? On fait beaucoup de prévention, on fait tout ce qu'on peut et puis on choisit quand même pas pour le Vlaams Bloc et pas pour nous.
They were saying to themselves, how did this happen? We did everything we could for prevention, and everyone still voted for the Vlaams Bloc. It was really a turning point. I found that in all my interviews, all the ministers of the interior that I interviewed, all the ministers of justice and of urbanism, they all said that this was the turning point. They said that now we need to be a little more strict. In Dutch, we say flinks instead of links. That is, we're still going to be to the left, but now we're armed. A little more strict, more controlling. Not let people just do anything anymore. In the years that followed, leading up to 1999, the socialists responded to the Vlaams Bloc by giving local mayors more and more power, until finally, in 1999,
the mayors were granted the right to write their own rules and punish rule breakers with administrative sanctions. Caroline explained the history of the sanctions differently. She explained them from inside the penal system. So if Elk was fitting the sanctions into a history of socialism in Belgium, a product that came out of the socialist response to extremist politics, Caroline was describing the sanctions as products of the legal system itself. Here's Caroline again.
Was it the late 1990s? Why does the federal government decide in Belgium then to come up with these administrative sanctions?
Well, I think it was mainly an issue of too much workload for the courts. And because of that, a lot of minor offenses, like petty thefts, for example, were acquitted. Is that the way you say it?
We say the case is dismissed, essentially.
That is the case. So the smaller offenses were dismissed just because there was no time and no money to actually go and pursue them. But the problem is that then to the public you create this kind of idea that you can just get away with it. So they wanted to react against that idea of people not being punished for the acts that they had committed. So that's why they created this whole idea of the administrative sanctions, because they thought then we should not give that kind of workload to the courts, because these are minor offenses anyway, so it's not really very, very useful for courts to go and spend their time on these little meaningless.
So is it right to see the sanctions from Elke's perspective or Caroline's perspective? I think that really both their perspectives are valid, and neither needs to be necessarily right or wrong. To me, both are just wondering, basically, how is it possible to create a reaction among Belgians who, and it's true that Belgians are comfortable with having a very complex government, but who might not want to untangle the origins and twisted evolutions of communal sanctions. It's just not that easy to take your average person and convince her that, for example, it was a very important moment in penal law when the Belgian legislature decriminalized in 2005 a large portion of the penal code so that what was once criminal was now sanctionable. And even though it was criminal and it was punished by a fine in the past, and it's still punished by a fine, it's just done differently. And I promise that I've even tried to explain this to people after a couple beers in a bar to make the case about Belgium, and you can see people, they glaze over. It's much easier to come out swinging. This is actually a personal preference of mine too. Instead of starting with the sanctions, it's much easier to bring up some kind of common trend, like how all our legal safeguards are eroding, or how states are becoming more and more unwilling to protect social services. To start with what most people consider important, and then to come at the sanctions in a roundabout way, that's what mostly gets people's interest. But then I think that you lose the ability to see the thing from different points of view. At the same time, though, it seems like this might be the most ingenious thing about the sanctions. The fact that they are so apparently boring and insignificant, but they're contentious as well. They require you to approach them through something else. You need to see them through some kind of lens in order to see them at all. So it's kind of like how we could just as easily see someone like Caroline, who would prefer that a judge be responsible for punishing the behavior that is currently punished by communal sanctions, we could see Caroline as being in favor of criminalization, like saying that she wants to punish rule breakers with more severity. Of course, this is not at all Caroline's position. Although it could be a position that we could describe around the communal sanctions. In the end, it seemed like Elk and Caroline agreed that the new law about administrative sanctions goes too far. Elk explained how the maximum amount of fines will increase to 1,500 euros under the proposed law, the new law, and that police will be able to fine people as young as 14, and that the law will extend itself to cover all new kinds of infractions, including harassment, making racist statements, or even being in a group of more than three people in certain areas of the city. Elke just thought this went too far. Here she is again. The problem is, even if you're not doing anything wrong, even if there's no material element to your act, you can still be punished. That is, I mean, there needs to be a material element. You need to have attacked someone, you need to have stolen something, you need to have done something criminal. In that case, there can be an intervention, but not if there's no more done than just three people being together on a street. That's just not a crime. Caroline found the same problems with the new law, and she emphasized especially that the government was planning on extending the law without first evaluating it.
Without any evaluation, which is very strange, they never evaluated the administrative sanctions. Now they're changing the law because they want to extend it. They want to raise the fines. They want to make the restriction order. They want to make it as one of the administrative sanctions. They want to lower the age as well. Now it was for people older than 16, but the idea is, or what is proposed is that it could be applied on people from the age of 14.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Money.
Yes. Yeah. Well, then it will be the parents probably that have to pay. But they tell, yes, their argument is that a lot of minor offenses happen in that age category. So, because now they had no ability of punishing people from 14 years old. So these are the proposals for the new law.
These proposals are likely to be officially published in September this year, and we'll be back with an update when the new law comes up. You can find more information about Elke DeVroe's work by reading her book on administrative sanctions. It's called A Swelling Culture of Control, The Genesis and Application of the Law on Municipal Administrative Sanctions in Belgium. The book's out with McClue. You can find out more about Caroline de Heest's work with the Liga voor Mensenrechten at the Liga's website. That's mensenrechten.be. mensenrechten.be. The music on this show was all licensed under the Creative Commons. You heard Detective Jazz Loop by Mihind Soharon, Kurt Richardson's cover of the Cops theme song, the song Homeless by Old Skull, and jazz tracks from the Hanova 7 and Mr. Mood's album Time Travelers, which is available for free download. Thanks to Fianza, the Federation of European Nonprofits Working with the Homeless, and Radio Panic for letting me use their studio. We'll have links to the information you heard about on the show on our website and full versions of the interviews with Elke and Caroline. The website is povertyisnotacrime.org. Poverty is not a crime. That's all one word, .org. See you soon.